Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a Citywire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. The deadline for entering Citywire South Africa's DFM Awards closed last Friday, and our annual event is scheduled for the end of October. We collected data on discretionary fund managers or DFMs performance and operations and present its results for the pure reason of transparency, especially for an industry that is hardly 10 years old, but is growing at a tremendous pace. All this information is particularly important to independent financial advisors. Why? Because the investment landscape has changed significantly over the past decade. Previously, financial advisors could pick a few top-performing managers by themselves and call it a day. But today, clients are demanding more diverse portfolios, including offshore investments and access to niche or boutique managers or even private markets. The regulatory environment has also become so burdensome, keeping up with compliance while still delivering value to clients has become more than a full-time job. But why is the outsourcing of the investment decisions to specialists becoming more necessary for financial planners now compared to a decade ago? To help me answer that question, I invited Senior DFM Specialist at Investment Solutions by Alex Forbes, Nadia Tokan, into the studio today. Nadia joined Alex Forbes in 2022 as the Head of Investment Consulting Strategy. Before joining the company, Tokan also worked for SEI Investments Company, Corian Capital, and 27Four Investment Managers. Nadia is a fully fledged key individual with Cat 1 and Cat 2 and Cat 2A FSPs, having passed all relevant exams and completed all required experience. Welcome, Nadia.
Thank you, Ruan. Thanks for having me.
Firstly, let me say that I'm very happy to hear that Alex Forbes entered our DFM Awards. So best of luck to you and your team. And let's go over to my first question. So what have been some of your early learnings on your DFM platform, which was launched not too long ago, on what clients, which are in essence financial advisors, would like to see initiated or even improved in the segment of the market?
Yeah, thanks, Ruan. So it's been a very interesting journey thus far. Clearly, Alex Forbes has a long history in the retail space. It's our first foray into the DFM space. And, through that, we've been interacting a lot more with independent financial advisors, obviously having built up a significant base of retail assets and having engaged with advisors within the Alex Forbes stable. Now starting to engage more extensively with advisors at independent financial advisory houses. And I'd say the key takeaway for us, Ren, has been the needs and complexities that these advisors are facing are increasingly becoming more and more demanding on them. Navigating a very complex investment environment, navigating just the sheer number of funds that they have to get through. If you look at the number of unit trusts that are out there, if you look at the number of ETFs that are being listed. So that's purely from an investment perspective, but the regulatory landscape has also gotten significantly more complicated. We've recently seen the implementation of the two-pot strategy. There's a lot of questions around investment strategy with regards to two-pots. There's a lot of question marks with regards to, what is the optimal long-term strategy in terms of, providing a balance of access and investing for the long term. There's a lot of question marks around private market investments and illiquid investments and harvesting that illiquidity premium. There's also a lot of question marks around structuring your clients' investments. Typically the IFA market has, over the course of the last decade, become more and more accustomed to the model portfolio setup. But there's a number of clients are now seeing some level of inefficiencies with regards to model portfolios, the tax treatment of them, how often you change the underlying, the reporting on them, the transparency thereof. Increasingly starting to move to more collective investment schemes. And then I'd say another very big trend has also been an increased demand to get a greater understanding of offshore asset classes. We 2.5 years or just over 2.5 years into the revised Reg 28, a limit of 45% offshore. And these advisors increasingly seeing more and more clients with assets offshore or taking assets offshore. It's an asset class that's done incredibly well and really wanting to understand the variety of strategies that are available out there. So, those have kind of been primarily the big themes that we've seen coming through in the very early days of the launch of our DFM.
Nadia, we both briefly touched on the reasons why, but let's talk more about the specific benefits of working with a DFM. How do they make life easier for advisors, especially when managing multiple clients with varying needs?
Yeah, so that's a good question, Ruan. So I think the first aim of a DFM is to ultimately get the advisor's advice out there at scale. If you can get the advisor's advice out there at scale, more members of the public become financially literate. More members of the public have comfortable financial outcomes over the long term, particularly with regards to retirement. So that's what a DFM always needs to be in the back of their mind. They are enabling. So how do we go about doing that? Well, I mean, the reality is that first of all, by taking investment research off of the IFA's plate and placing it within an institution that has a long and rich history of due diligencing strategies, due diligencing managers, that automatically creates a lot of efficiencies within an IFA's book. Second of all, Ruan, it comes back to the point that I mentioned earlier around, providing the platform for things like collective investment schemes, which are a far more efficient way of implementing an advisor's end client investment strategy, because you can pull multiple clients into a single collective investment scheme across multiple platforms. And I think that's the important part. You're not loading different model portfolios across multiple platforms. You've got a single portfolio across multiple platforms and can rebalance within that portfolio without creating, tax considerations. So certainly creating and enhancing efficiencies there. Again, giving more time back into the advisor's diary. The final piece I would say, Ruan, is really to help advisors with things like succession planning is very topical at the moment. Can your DFM help you with the succession planning discussion? And in so doing that, relieve the amount of pressure that an advisor is under, ultimately, again, putting more time back in their diary and enabling them to focus on advice, see a greater number of clients and ultimately expand their business, but at the same time, get better quality financial advice at scale out to the market.
Nadia, that makes a lot of sense to me, and it sounds like DFMs offer a lot of value to advisors. But is there a downside or challenge that advisors should be aware of?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing, Ruan, is that in engaging with a DFM, I think, the industry in general, is facing a lot of transparency issues. So is your DFM being very transparent with the way that they construct your portfolios from a performance outcome perspective? We know that model portfolios are obviously not subject to things like board notice 92, the fact sheets, etc. So, ensuring that you've got a great degree of transparency. Having said that, look, there has been a hell of a lot of work that's been done to improve transparency over the last couple of years. The introduction of DFM surveys, the introduction of performance surveys of, portfolio tools and the rest of it. That's obviously gone a long way to improve that transparency. So I'd say first and foremost, that would be the primary concern, is ensuring that you're getting this great degree of transparency within, in dealing with your DFM. The second leg would be, ensuring that your DFM is giving you access to the correct fee classes at the fund managers you're dealing with, institutional rate fees, and in doing that, negotiating the best possible fee to pass on those fee savings onto your end client and possibly enhance that compounding over time. And secondly, I'd say the biggest thing would be, are you ensuring that your DFM is working for you? A DFM must offer a level of flexibility to be able to, adapt to your particular practice needs and not try and kind of shape you or mold you into a preconceived idea of what a scalable model or scalable product is. So really understanding your advice practice, understanding how you go about integrating financial advice into the investment products and services that you offer, and ensuring that there's a match between those two and offering that flexibility to differ from one practice to the next. And then I'd say the next big point was ensuring that your DFM has significant offshore research capability. You know, there's a lot of global strategies and fund managers out there, you know, into the tens of thousands, and ensuring that your DFM is able to absorb, you know, that offshore manager research component and bring best investment research and manager research to you on the global front for your advisors as well.
Those are very important points and red flags that advisors should pay attention to. Nadia, in my business, I hear a lot about the overlap between Cat 1 and Cat 2 licenses. Can you perhaps explain the difference between the two and how this affects the relationship between advisors and DFMs?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Ron. So essentially, a Cat 1 license basically gives you the ability to provide financial advice to a client, and a Cat 2 license enables you to actually execute investment decisions or manage investments on a discretionary basis on behalf of your clients. So, you know, in the DFM-IFA relationship, obviously, it's of critical importance to understand, you know, if I'm a Cat 1 advisor, what role is my DFM playing for me? And I'm essentially completely outsourcing the discretionary investment management decisions out to the DFM. And in that particular instance, the IFA needs to ensure that the way that the model portfolios or the collective investment schemes are being managed on behalf of their clients is in line with their advice process. And then if you've got an IFA, it's got a Cat 1 and a Cat 2 license, the DFM is really providing an investment consulting service to the IFA. So, you know, in line with that, it's essentially how much influence does my DFM or my DFM investment consultant have into the investment management process? How do I incorporate those views with ensuring that I'm overlaying it with a view, with my own views, and in overlaying it with my own views, ensuring that you know, whatever recommendations or proposals are being brought to an investment committee of sorts, how does that integrate with my advice process and ensuring that the two tie up with each other? So the critical thing here, Ruan, is ultimately, where does the investment decision making rest, and ensuring that the investment decision making is coherent with the advice strategy? So obviously for an IFA with a Cat 1 and Cat 2 process, they have greater oversight and control over integrating those. And the IFAs with a Cat 1 license, just ensuring that they're holding their DFM accountable to continuously provide investment management recommendations and solutions that's in line with their existing advice process.
Wow, that's quite insightful. Nadia, as the DFM market grows, particularly with its 30% growth rate just in South Africa, how do we ensure that this growth is sustainable and doesn't lead to any bumps in the road and down the line?
Yeah, so this is a critical point that, you know, DFMs and the IFAs and the industry at large, regulators need to ensure is being considered on an ongoing basis. So I think from sustainability, Juan, you really got to get back to the two original questions. One, are you enabling financial advisors to get their advice out there at scale? So more people of the general public are getting high quality financial advice. So, you know, the DFM industry needs to ensure that high quality financial advice, which is what advisors do best, is getting out there at scale. And that ultimately needs to be the litmus test. So, you know, we've got to sit back and look at this in 3, 4, 5, 10 years time for that matter and say, has the quality of financial advice improved? One. And two, has there been more people getting that high quality advice because DFMs give more time back to the advisors? So I'd say that's the one way of ensuring sustainability. The second way of ensuring sustainability, Ruan, is by absolutely ensuring that you've got better investment outcomes by partnering with a DFM as you would have had by, you know, kind of picking your own funds as a financial advisor. So that comes back to the point around transparency. DFMs need to improve transparency over time, particularly in the model portfolio world. We've made taken a number of steps, you know, to kind of improve that transparency, and that needs to be ongoing. And, you know, that transparency ultimately brings greater regulation, brings greater disclosure, and all of that collectively means we can more objectively measure whether DFMs have produced better investment outcomes for end clients relative to what the IFA would have produced on their own. So I'd say those would be the two key factors: getting high quality advice out there at scale, and then also improving investment outcomes that will ensure the sustainability of the industry.
So So we focused mainly on the South African industry. Let's take this conversation a bit more global. How does the South African DFM market compare to those overseas? Are we on par, or are there areas where we need to catch up on?
Yeah, so that's actually been a very interesting point. In a number of respects, the South African DFM industry is actually ahead of what we see globally, you know, within the likes of the UK, et cetera. So, you know, because financial services regulation and the financial services industry is quite advanced in South Africa, you know, we've actually seen a lot of kind of innovations coming out of the South African market. So, you know, if I could kind of draw a parallel or kind of cite one example of that and draw a parallel to the UK market, you know, we certainly see a lot more kind of integration of being able to advise category two IFAs in South Africa and, you know, bedding down that model and getting into a rhythm with your IFA. You see a lot more leadership of that coming out of the South African markets relative to what we see in the UK markets. So that's been a very positive outcome, you know, to kind of witness. And in many other respects, when it comes to model portfolio solutions, you know, and kind of, you know, the transparency of those, the pricing of those, I'd say it, and also just kind of the efficiency of implementing those, I'd say we're very much on par with what we see globally, but quite encouraging to see in certain aspects, we're actually leading the global market. And, you know, that Cat 2 or that Category 2 consulting space is actually quite an interesting one, given the number of Category 2 licenses that are available or they are, you know, registered with the FSCA in South Africa. And then ensuring that even though an advisor has a Cat 2 license, that seamless integration is in place, but then ensuring that they're getting the best possible investment research and putting time back in those advisors' diaries. So South Africa has really been one of the front runners in that market, which has been quite nice to see.
Now, Dea, we're talking about the evolution of an industry, but no evolution happens without disruptive technologies. How does AI and machine learning and all these other big words that I don't necessarily understand fit into the DFM financial advisor relationship?
Yeah. So, look, I mean, I think at the end of the day, Ruan, I think the industry in general is just going to have to learn to take the positives of it to ultimately increase efficiency. So, you know, we come back to the whole point around efficiency. What we want to do is give more time to advisors to get high quality advice out there. We've said it a number of times on this podcast. To the extent that things like that AI, you know, or big data can help create those efficiencies and can help streamline sort of a lot of administrative processes, I think it's something that the industry has to adopt over time. You know, to the extent to which we've, you know, kind of already adopted that, you know, it's probably still very early stages, not dissimilar to a lot of industries globally where, you know, kind of the second and third derivative of artificial intelligence and big data is yet to kind of really hit the market in a meaningful way. We're still very much in the first derivative of that. So I think once we get to those second and third derivatives and we can create efficiencies, I certainly think it's something that the industry in general needs to adopt in order, again, to serve that ultimate end outcome. Give more time back to advisors to see more clients, to get high quality advice out there in a scalable way.
Nadia, as a final question and talking about disruption, do you envision the DFM model replacing or supplementing or just plain shaking up some of the more traditional platforms and offerings out there, like LISPs or multi-managers?
Yeah, so I think we'd have to kind of differentiate between those different models, you know. So I think that certain industries that DFM wouldn't necessarily be able to replace, and that would be things like the LISP industry. You know, the LISP industry is kind of an industry that would work complementary with the DFM market. You know, so basically in order to give access to clients and, you know, to provide an administrative function to clients, and that administrative function is a very critical part of the value chain. The DFM is there to provide an investment management and a structuring side of the industry. So where I do think, you know, essentially a DFM is a retail multi-manager run. So I don't think it necessarily is going to replace the multi-manager, but it's basically going to be multi-manager version 2.0, where we don't only take care of the investment side for you. We take care of your practice prosperity. We take care of, you know, giving you the tools to get best advice out there, to supporting the best advice you're giving. And really, that's the way the DFM market has to evolve. You know, you have to have an element of best practice in your DFM that you're offering to the IFA market and to your IFA clients. And you really have to enable them to get best advice out there. So, I mean, to your point, I think it works complementary with the LISP industry. And I think DFM is really a retail multi-manager version 2.0 that's just dealing with more aspects in your business other than just the investment management so that you can enhance the end outcome.
Well, that's all the time we have for today, but there is no doubt that investment outsourcing is transforming the financial advising landscape. The current role is more about enhancing efficiency and supporting advisors rather than replacing them. As these tools continue to evolve, they will likely play a greater part in portfolio management and compliance, but the human element remains essential. For me, at least. Thank you, Nadia, for joining us today. I found your insights were extremely valuable. To all our Citywire South African listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uester, and my producer, Vera Loba de Silva from the Citywire Studios team. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and as from this week, on the proudly South African iono.fm platform as well. Our audio content is also available on our website, so please go register and have a look at our wealth of multimedia content. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.